I'm Steve Bertrand on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hey, musicians, don't cut off Steve Bertrand.
No, I like it.
He's a WGN Walk of Famer, for heaven's sake.
It's a little duet. I don't mind at all.
Hi, everybody. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. Call in, text in. We would love to hear from you.
Is this going
to
be a two-cure week today?
Yes. Yes.
Or this week?
You're going to hear a lot of Cure music starting off the show, Steve. Very good observation.
This is the Cure?
I think so.
I think so, yeah. Whenever I'm alone with you.
Yeah, we've got a team of people working on that.
I don't know.
We'll find out. Yeah, it's the Cure. Yeah. A beautiful moment involving Jasmine, our producer, Wendy, that you didn't get a chance to see, but I will share it with you. On Steve's show just a little while ago, he had on some kids, part of Dream On Education. They were in studio. They did a segment with him. And then Sarah, who works here at the station, kind of gave the kids a tour of WGN, of all the offices and what goes where. And as they were passing by our office, one of the kids poked her head in and said, "You have a nice office," to which both Jasmine and I said, "Well, thank you." And then, and I should let Jasmine tell the second part because it more directly affects her than it does me, then a little boy poked his head in just seconds after that. And what did he say, Jazz?
"You're beautiful."
Yep.
Oh.
How about that? To Jasmine, Wendy, not to me.
What did you read? Were you taken aback? What'd you say?
I said thank you.
Yeah.
What a way to start your day.
Isn't that nice?
They were very sweet kids.
Yeah, they were very nice kids. But was that the first time? Now, I don't consider that hitting on, because he's 10. But what a
don't even go there.
What a bold move for a 10-year-old boy to poke his head into a place of business and to say to somebody working there, "You're beautiful."
I think that's an absolutely sweet
thing to say. That's a fantastic thing.
And I think more people should do that to their coworkers today.
Yeah. Yep.
"You're beautiful, Bill."
Yeah, well, Wendy, right back at you.
That's a feel good, man. You got honestly, you know, when your husband tells you or your kids go, "Oh, Mom, you look good."
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything, but when a stranger just walks into your office.
Right. And then I saw him later in the hall and he said, "What is her situation exactly?" And I said, I'm not comfortable. You're 10. I'm not comfortable with this."
Is she walking with anyone?
Right. That was said. But that was just a very nice way to start the day. You're absolutely right. It can only get better.
I wish I was here.
Yeah.
They asked me my favorite part of journalism.
What a great question.
Yeah. I said lunch. Let's see. I think I connected with them a little bit.
Yeah. It's very, very nice.
But they were charter school kids.
Yeah.
Because I asked them if they were home for the strike, and no.
No, not affected by the strike. Just a little follow-up to something that happened yesterday. I mentioned that because of the president being in town, it was impossible for me to get from where I usually get to here, you know?
They had a lot of street closures, a lot of different street closures.
They kept changing, so even though I was listening to Mary's traffic reports and trying to get to where the opening was, much like our own Chicago Bears, Wendy, I couldn't find an opening. There was no way to get...
So did you take a knee and cry?
Yes. Yes. I blew a field goal in the last few seconds, and you know the rest. So at some point, as they're rerouting me, because there has to be a street that goes from where I am to where I need to be, but I was wrong. They kept rerouting. And at some point, I just gave up and said, "I just need to park in a parking garage because I will not get to work. You know, I've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
I won't be able to get in." So I found a parking spot. I found a garage right across from Trump Tower, coincidentally, which was it ended up being the worst possible place I could have parked. Because then when I was done, I couldn't get out. Anyway, I have not, and I'm not saying this as a brag, I'm saying it because it's fact. The last few jobs I've had include parking. I've not had to pay for a parking space in years.
Yeah.
Do you know how much it costs to park downtown?
$34.
$49.
You got ripped off, dude.
I was in for less than 4 hours, and it was $49 to park.
Well, you can expense that. Send it to Donald Trump.
Can't. That's my move on
that.
But
you did get out, right?
I got out eventually, but then once I got out of the garage, the streets were closed on the way back.
Yeah.
So it was even more of a maze to get out than it was to get in.
I was going down Columbus towards Lakeshore Drive yesterday as the president was moving from Trump Tower, I believe, back to take his helicopter or whatever he was doing. Mm-hmm. And he was there was a giant tour bus escorted by police that was going like underneath where you could get. Yes, Steve?
Here's the thing with that. We're assuming, making assumptions here, but I'm pretty confident. You know, all this, there are all these chiefs of police are meeting at McCormick Place.
Right.
So when they leave their hotels, Chicago police are escorting them to the convention center.
Oh, okay. So maybe it wasn't him. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because I've seen it. I saw it several times yesterday. I saw it again this morning. And they're not, like, whipping through traffic, but they've just got squad rolls in front of them and behind them with their lights on.
But what I thought was so amazing, and I know this was happening elsewhere,
yeah,
but as I passed like a turnoff, I don't know what street that is, right near Soldier Field and en route to McCormick Place, there were all the big dump trucks and plows and everything else that were blockading.
Right.
And it was pretty impressive to see how our police department is protecting a guy who's slamming our police department. They were working hard. It was the city workers were out there.
Right.
It was very impressive.
Yeah. Impressive, but then I kept thinking to myself, is it like this in Washington, D.C.? I've been to Washington, D.C. twice. And never for a long time. 2 days one time,
but
3 days another.
Time.
Absolutely for a good time. So, is it like that in Washington, D.C. every day when you're in D.C., is it just a constant barrage of rerouting because the president's going from here to there and it's got to affect traffic?
Like if he's going to Panera to get a salad?
Yeah, let's say
something.
He's going to Kentucky Fried Chicken. How do they make that work?
Maybe someone in the news department would know the answer to that, because I would imagine it's there happening on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
So, you know, he can just get in a town car or whatever and go where he needs to go. But here it was a special visit.
Right.
They took extra precautionary measures.
I don't think he travels a lot in Washington, D.C.
Stuff is just brought to him. It's better that way.
Right.
That's the one reason I'd want to be president.
I mean, you'll cop your copters out quite a bit.
Right. Right, right, right. I also noticed, because after work, I had errands to run in the city, and I did that by foot. I was walking to all the errands. So they were closing off streets that he wasn't going to go anywhere near. And I guess you have to do that. I guess strategically that's your play, is to just close off a bunch of stuff so that if anyone is bent on doing something horrible, they're not sure which route he's taking.
Well, it's for security reasons, too. I mean, that's why they closed the express lanes. They were closed all, you know, past
most
like 9
day.
O'clock yesterday morning all the way till later. So.
Yeah.
But is that just like an exterior perimeter? Because he wasn't going to be on the express lanes,
yeah,
right?
He wasn't even on the Kennedy.
So what is accomplished in that?
I think if for some reason the helicopter doesn't fly, then they've got it already shut down.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Yeah, because they had to get him here, you know, to McCormick quickly.
That's
and
true.
The
and
helicopter
the weather was
took
iffy.
Off in it. Yeah, right.
It made for an interesting day of travel.
Oh, man.
What are the policemen I talked to? Because I asked a bunch of police officers. I said, I'm parked there and I need to go north. What do I do? And they just laughed because there was no way I could do that anytime soon. So one of them said, and this is my standard answer anytime I'm kidding about getting anywhere, he goes, Lower Wacker, it's a miracle down there. And I go,
it
yeah.
is.
That's how I got home. How
did
do you think
take
I
Lower
got
Wacker?
Out of here yesterday? Because I was parked in the parking lot. I took Columbus, got on Lower Wacker, and everybody was down there because they couldn't be on Upper Wacker. So
but Mary, would you, like this police officer, would you refer to Lower Wacker as it's a miracle down there?
It is pretty much
a miracle.
It is a miracle.
Street.
I take it in every day.
I do it
home every day.
I do it every day. I'm down there.
Yeah.
It's a little
it's
dangerous
a miracle.
Sometimes, but it's it's always a miracle.
I liked in the 60s and the 70s when the lighting down there was, it was a greenish lighting.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
You liked that?
Yeah, because I pretended I was in the Green Hornet. But the whole time I was driving in there, Cato and I would get places quickly.
I thought I was an ant in an ant farm. It was just really bad lighting.
It was very dimly lit.
And I hate when people ask me directions. I'm pretty much a suburbanite, and I get to know the area around where I work. So when I worked in the Hancock building, I knew that area pretty well. Merchandise Mart. Now here, I'm still learning it because we haven't been here that long.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't like the pressure when someone asks me, how do you get to Navy Pier?
What do you do? I'm
I
not from
go,
here. I'm
oh,
from I'm from
you know,
Philadelphia.
Maybe you should ask someone else. I mean, if I really know, I will explain. But I'm always so afraid that I'm going to give them wrong directions. And I don't want them to have that welcome into Chicago.
Right.
Where some blonde, bossy woman was giving me the wrong way.
See, yeah. I intentionally give them wrong directions.
You do not.
It's a very powerful feeling.
It's the difference between you and me.
Let us take a quick break.
One of them.
A lot coming up on today's show. Stay here. Spill and Wendy on WGN.
Let's go, girls. That's right. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Bill, you can be part of the girls' crew today.
Thanks, Wendy. Appreciate it. I'm glad to be a part.
In the studio with us right now, Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer of Lakeside Bank, Alan Rose, is with us. Alan, how are you feeling this morning?
I'm not sure yet.
It's too early.
I only had that one cup of coffee.
Right. Well, get back to us. Let us know.
I will. I'll just have a quick nap and a cup of coffee, and I'll be back.
That's perfect. You're here to talk about an important initiative that the bank is behind. Now We're Cooking. Please explain.
We have several education programs running, and the first one that we launched 3 years ago is called, I apologize for the name, it's called Women First, Now We're Cooking. We work with the Washburn Culinary Institute, which is part of the City Colleges, and we have literally a cooking contest. We have three celebrity female chefs who serve as celebrity judges. Everyone who comes to the event also gets to taste everything that the student chefs cook, and they vote.
Yeah.
So the celebrity chefs pick the overall winner, the grand prize. They pick the best presentation, and everyone who attends votes. This being Chicago, but you still only get one vote. And they get the People's Choice Award. So we give away $10,000 in Lakeside Bank scholarships.
Wow.
Could you potentially win both?
No, we try to have three winners.
Okay.
Yeah. So an overall grand prize, a best presentation, and a People's Choice Award.
Excellent. Very, very nice.
Here's why this is a fantastic idea. You have professional chefs that are there to judge, and I imagine they will share their experiences with what it's like. I love to cook. I would love to work as a chef in a restaurant, but that is hard, hard work.
It is. It's not only hard work, but it's hard for women to break into the industry.
Why is that?
It's really just the glass ceiling, and it's traditionally been a very male-dominated field. So these are young women who have financial need, and they're studying hard. To get into the industry. Our female celebrity chefs, and may I mention them?
Please do.
Carrie Nahabedian of Brindell, Sarah Stegner of Prairie Grass, and Mindy Siegel of Mindy Siegel's Hot Chocolate have given us a tremendous amount of their time and energy helping guide these students, judging their meals, and then, of course, they're a great point of contact for these Washburn students.
All right, so Washburn Culinary and Hospitality Institute, one of the oldest culinary schools in the country. It's been serving Chicago for over 80 years.
Serving's a good word, yes.
Wow, yes. Yeah. All right, so this is Lakeside Bank, and you can find out more information, lakesidebank.com. How can we help support this? And listeners, how can they help?
Well, you can come to the event. We call it a very delicious evening. We hope you'll join us. And listeners can go to lakesidebank.com and buy tickets to Women First, Now We're Cooking. We hope you'll join us.
That's Tuesday, November 5th from 5:30 to 8:30.
Correct.
Okay.
Go behind the scenes with me for a second, Alan. When something like this, when an idea like this happens, who presents it to you, to who? Do they come to Lakeside Bank? Does Lakeside Bank go to somebody else? Well,
no, these are Lakeside Bank initiatives. We have several education programs running, and this one is designed to help women in the culinary field break through and find employment and careers in the culinary arts.
You mentioned that you have three going concurrently right now. This is one of them, the one we just talked about. Now We're Cooking. What are the other two?
The other two, one is called Kids Count. And I'm sorry that we're only on the radio. You can't see the beautiful logo that we have for it, too. But we're in half a dozen grammar schools in our geographies around the city. And Lakeside Bankers go into the schools once a month. They stay with the same class through the whole school year, assuming they ever go back to school.
Yeah, right.
We won't get into that, right?
Yeah. No. God, I hope that's helps.
And they teach kids how money works. And the parents love it. The teachers love it. The kids love it. We make these fun, interactive programs for the kids. And that's called Kids Count. That's also in its third year.
All right. Somebody should have told me how money worked when I was
years
younger.
Years ago, right? Yeah.
I mean, because kids don't have any concept of money.
They have no idea, right? No, they think it's just a magic credit card that parents or guardians pull out of their pocket and everything's taken care of.
I remember the first time I had a credit card. You kind of wonder, oh, wait, I have to pay for that? And I can only imagine little kids have no idea. Can you come in and teach adults how to manage their money too?
Well, you know, it's good that you mentioned that. We do hope to take kids count and expand it. For example, you know, college kids count too, and we can help with those programs, whether it's online or actually getting into places.
Is the emphasis on budgeting money? What aspect of money is it?
Understanding how money works.
Yeah.
So when you're earning money, guess what? There's taxes.
Right.
When you buy something, guess what? There's taxes, and how to manage a budget so that you can live and become a productive citizen. And this is something Lakeside understands, of course, so we're able to pass that knowledge on to children at hopefully an impressionable age.
Do you ever get a kid or an adult who says, how come we can't just print more money?
No, not yet.
Why can't we?
Yeah, I'm so with you, Bill.
Well, seems I do have like this printing have press in my basement.
All right, so that's number two, and the third one is what?
The third program is called Write On, WRITE, and that's a creative writing contest for Chicago Public School seniors that are graduating in good standing, and they've been accepted to a 2 or 4 year institution, and they have to write an essay. Being a little bit oriented toward marketing, we did throw in one wrinkle that they had to incorporate Lakeside's tagline of "It's about time" into the story they write. But they can write about any subject they want: family, friends, social issues. I don't care if it's science fiction. Mm-hmm. The challenge there is for the writer to move us, to make us think or laugh or cry. Writing is a skill that no matter what industry you go into is essential. The ability to think, to put those thoughts down in writing, it's essential.
Yeah.
So that's Write On, and that's in the new year. It'll be in its third year. We had 4 times the number of entries last year.
That's good news.
Yeah.
That's
so it's very good news. So we give away $2,500 scholarships.
Every penny counts.
Every penny counts.
I learned that in grade school.
It's one of our lessons, actually.
To somebody who might ask, what is in it for Lakeside Bank to be behind programs like this, what would your answer be?
Well, the answer is obvious. We're trying to help. If there's anything that's the most important thing in our society, it's education.
Right.
If we can help people get educated, whether it's in the Culinary Institute with Women First, or teaching children how money works with Kids Count, or helping kids get in college and stay in college with Right On, we're just trying to help. It's something that's always been part of our DNA.
And it makes sense for a bank who has money to get behind something like this.
Right. It does.
All right. So, Women First, Now We're Cooking. This is happening Tuesday, November 5th. You can go to lakesidebank.com to find out more information. How many people are participating in
this? Last year, we had over 200 attendees. And I'm hoping we'll break that record this year. So, please go to lakesidebank.com and buy a ticket.
Are there any rules into what they can and cannot prepare?
No. The female chefs who are contesting from Washburn can prepare anything they wish. They work with their professors, of course, at school to devise recipes. We ask them to, number one, work with seasonal ingredients. Number two, to have a recipe that was influenced by a woman in their lives.
Right.
So we try to give it a theme.
Oh, that's good news. Yep. Yep. So many times on the cooking shows, they'll put some sort of parameters on what they're allowed to use, which spices they're allowed to use, types. You have none of that going.
Totally open, as long as it's seasonal and reflects the influence of a woman in their lives.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't realize, now that I'm thinking about it, that there was such a shortage of women being chefs. I mean, I do think about it, and the head chefs at a lot of places are men, but it's women who do a lot of the cooking.
Certainly in life, and again, it's an industry where if we can provide some help, we're delighted to.
Your tagline is, it's about time.
Yes.
You can change that to time, T-H-Y-M-E, for the cooking competition.
Very good.
Just trying to help.
You know, I could use some help in marketing.
I'm here for you.
He's Alan Rose. He's Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer of Lakeside Bank. And any of these initiatives that we have spoken about, are all these up on the website?
They are.
LakesideBank.com. It's so good to see you getting behind education and helping young people move forward.
Thank you.
This must make you feel pretty good to see all this coming out, right? This is good news, doesn't it?
It really does. Yeah. And it's an homage to my mom, who was in higher education her whole life and always instilled that in us.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah. Alan, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Really
we appreciate it. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we are here all day. It's a rainy, gloomy day. Did you get any snow by you?
There was no snow yet, but in the forecast they're saying Thursday, Halloween, some snow is expected. You got snow already?
It was a misty kind of snowish material. It wasn't really rain. Uh-huh. It wasn't really snow.
Yeah.
And it's just making me upset to think about Halloween because you never know what to dress up as. Because one year I know it was like almost 90 degrees.
Right.
Some years it's so cold that you have to wear a coat over your costume so no one can even see your costume.
Right.
And this year, snow.
Yeah.
That's not fair or
and
right.
I'm going to be a sexy porpoise for Halloween this year, Wendy, so I don't know how.
Do you want me to record me doing that?
Could you do that and I'll just carry a tape recorder and play it? Yeah, that'd be excellent. Thank you for that.
All right. Alan, did you have something to do?
I just wanted to add one thing. The best costume I ever wore for Halloween was Groucho Marx.
Were you?
Because you can say anything. You have total permission to say anything.
You just blame Groucho for anything that's said and done. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Maybe people should dress as Don Rickles and get away with things,
Wendy,
too.
Genius.
Still to come, we're going to talk to Peter Asher. Started out as half a Peter and Gordon, and then went on to be a producer and manager, brother of Jane Asher, who dated Paul McCartney for several years.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk to him at 11:35, and it's also a Tech Tuesday, which is coming up in about 15 minutes.
Thank you, Steve.
Nice bongo work, Billy.
Thank you, Wendy. It's very kind.
You look beautiful.
Thanks. You said yesterday, I hope it's okay to share this with the listeners, that you have still not purchased any Halloween candy.
Yeah.
Halloween is 2 days away.
Yeah, I just realized that. Do you know how expensive candy is? Now, listen, I'm not saying I'm not going to purchase it, but it's really expensive now.
Yes, it is.
You can get specials on these little fun-size bags, but there are only like 12 candy bars in there.
Right. It's going to end up costing you thousands.
I don't care. I'll be ready.
It's worth it. Huffington Post is coming to your rescue. They are warning you. These are the top 10 candies that kids don't want. Don't buy any of these, according to Huffington Post, because kids will be disappointed, heartbroken, crushed, and you don't want to do that to a kid on Halloween.
I need to write these down.
All right. They are, I was going to say in no particular order, but I'd be lying to you. They're ranked from 10th to 1st.
These are the worst
candies. The worst of the Halloween candies. See if you agree. In number 10, in the number 10 spot, Bit of Honey.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Bit of Honey. So good.
I like an occasional every 5 year Bit of Honey.
You have one Bit of Honey every 5 years?
I mean, saw one, I'd have it, but that's not something I would spend my money on if I was at a candy store. You would?
Yes. Except I've had not one but two instances where a Bit of Honey has taken out a filling.
Yeah.
There's something about the Bit of Honey that just removes fillings instantly. Maybe that's why they made the top 10.
Actually, that's why I think it was developed by dentists back in the 1890s.
Steve, it was. I know you're kidding, but it was. Number 9, these, again, the worst Halloween candies. No kid wants these. Don't get them. Buy something else.
Why do I have a feeling you're going to like every one of these?
Because he likes every piece of candy.
I enjoy candy. I really do.
I'm picky.
Good and Plenty.
Mm.
Again, every once in a while, if I saw a box sitting around, I'd go, oh, Good and Plenty, I haven't had them in so long. And then I'd taste them and I'd go, there's a reason I haven't had them in so long.
Would you agree that if you dissect the name, good, maybe, plenty, again, maybe.
They're more scant now.
Yeah.
There's no candy in any of these little boxes.
They should have just come out with the crust.
Yeah, the candy coating.
The candy,
yeah.
Because that's the best
the
part.
The shell.
Right.
Licorice now, is a tough sell. Black licorice.
Black licorice, by the way, number 8 on the list.
Like a black licorice Twizzler?
Yeah, it's showing just that kind of generic looking wrap, and then the licorice is inside. But that's always, unless you love licorice as a kid, wasn't that disappointing if you went to somebody's house and you got that bag of nondescript licorice?
So, but going back to Bit of Honey, if you don't mind, remember the little black or orange wrapped candies?
Yeah. Those are also on here, Steve.
Are they? What do they call them?
Kisses.
They call them peanut butter kisses.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Those were like the minute they put those out, they were stale.
Right.
As soon as they made them, they were instantly stale.
Again, if those are sitting in like a grandma's candy dish, I would take one. And they are kind of good because they do have that peanut butter center.
Agreed.
But again,
I remember asking a woman once, I went up to the door, she gave me a handful of two or three. And then I just said, these are from last year, right? Because they just seem like they're leftover.
I would have started whipping them at
you. They're like rocks. It's like eating a peanut butter rock.
Some of them have been soft.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never had a. They're always just so hard and stale. It's like an instant thing. Number seven, a classic, but they say don't get them. Kids don't want them. Smarties.
Really?
Boring, right?
It just, they're boring. You need chocolate.
Yeah. Chocolate Smarties.
No.
Now we're talking.
No, we're not talking.
You're combining the delicious flavors of both chocolate and chalk together.
No, Smarties were a good chalk. They were like a tart chalk.
The flavor was always so mild. It was there, but you really had to search for it.
Those are good for like little kids.
Well, you know why kids like them, school. I think? Because when you open the pack, you can put them in teams. You go, I'll put the orange ones here, I'll put the yellow ones here, the blue here, the green here.
You're,
and then you have to
eat,
then you have to eat them. Like you would do with a team.
Eat the bears, will you?
You'll get botulism. Number six, Wendy, this is upsetting because this is one of my all-time favorite candies and has no business being on this list. A Chicago favorite, the Tootsie Roll. Were you, as a kid, I loved getting Tootsie Rolls. You
because
didn't like
there
that?
Weren't a lot of selections. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's too much of a time investment and energy, you know.
They're okay.
Oh, you guys.
I just donated money. I don't know who gives out the Tootsie Rolls, the organization that if you put money in.
Kiwanis.
It,
isn't it?
I don't know. I think it's Kiwanis is peanuts.
Yeah.
And I got a Tootsie Roll, and I got like a pretty large one. And
yeah.
Michael, Jim, and I were in the car, and I'm like, oh, I haven't had a Tootsie Roll in a while. And again, I can see why I haven't had it in a while. It was
disappointed
just,
you?
It was just nothing.
Oh, I enjoy the Tootsie Roll so much. Number six on the list of the worst Halloween candy. That's not right. Number five, Necco wafers.
Those should be number one. The worst ever.
They're fun if you're playing communion. If you've got some friends over and you're playing communion, then the Necco wafer is great. But other than that, no.
Unless it's the chocolate one, even that's not fun.
Well,
then.
That's not chocolate,
it's
though. That's
licorice.
And that's, Steve, that's not good.
No, there's a brown
there
one.
There is a brown one, too.
Those things are the worst.
But Mary, you always say the communion.
We
and
did
I know
the communion. We used to play.
Yeah.
It's shaped like it.
Yeah.
But if I can tell you, as being a Catholic, and it should be a better one.
Yeah.
The flying saucers were the way to go because you put it
same
on your tongue and it deteriorates.
Yeah. Same consistency as your communion. But communion don't have those little candy dots on them.
Well, no, you like separate the, it. You pull them apart and you eat the dots.
Yeah. Number four, again, if you're just tuning in, the worst Halloween candy. If you've bought any of these candies, return them. Unless it's Tootsie Rolls, then bring them here to the station. I'll get rid of them for you. Wax bottles. This is the bottle that's made of wax and has a third of an ounce of liquid, colorful liquid inside.
Colorful liquid? It's just sugar water.
Yeah. Don't fill up on it.
But again, there weren't a lot to choose from when we were growing up, and that was kind of exciting.
I guess so. But wasn't it disappointing that that was all you got? Like, for the effort of biting the top off of it and sucking it down, and you got such a little amount, you'd have to drink, like, 3,000 of those to even feel the difference in your throat.
It was like penny candy. We used to get it at the baseball game stand.
Right.
And they were a penny apiece, so, I mean, it was, you know, for
you gave
a penny.
Into it, right.
And then you could chew the wax.
Yeah. Did yours come in like a little plastic carton?
No. These were just solo.
The one, oh, you could buy them individually? Yeah. We would get it was like a 6-pack carton and it had the wax bottles inside.
Here,
and
kids.
You'd also put on a wax mustache before you drink it to complete the picture. Number three, Steve's favorite. He mentioned them earlier. And I like these, but they're always stale. Your peanut butter kisses. The third worst candy. Number two, circus peanuts.
Oh, my God, the consistency of those things.
Yeah.
What is it?
I don't know.
It's like a moldy marshmallow.
That's what they should have referred to them as.
Oh, those are horrible.
Happy Halloween. Here's some moldy marshmallows. Thanks, Mrs. Anderson. And then the number one. Now, this can't be right because this is a staple of the Halloween season, candy corn.
I just bought some yesterday.
Yeah. You're supposed to buy it. It's Halloween.
It's not good.
I love candy corn.
Yeah, I'm on the candy corn.
I eat so much of it at this time.
The key is you have to eat it in three parts. You have to bite off the tip, and then you bite off the middle, and then you have whatever's left over.
The tip is the sweetest part, and then it gets a little buttery as you get down toward the yellow.
Can I make a suggestion?
The whole thing.
I agree with you, Mary.
Guys.
I just bought some. I was at Five Below yesterday, and it was only $1 for the bag, so I bought it.
Yeah.
And if you put it in a bowl with peanuts, salted shelled peanuts.
Yeah.
You mix it together. It's a pretty little look, well, and it tastes good. Just like a payday bar.
Oh, that would
That's
be good.
That's the new thing. That's what everybody's doing now.
Oh, we've been doing it for 20 years.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Wow. My sister-in-law, I think, started that.
You just saved the candy corn industry.
You have to buy Brock. That doesn't the other sound, stuff is
Steve,
awful.
Steve disagrees?
I'd rather. Wendy, you should bring some in because I don't believe you.
You know, can I tell you, I swear to God, I almost put some in a baggie to bring it in today just to snack upon.
Yeah.
But I put it together last night. Jimmy Mack was complaining on the candy corn to peanut ratio. Mm-hmm. He's like, you have too many peanuts in here. So I fixed it, and the bowl was almost gone. I'll bring some in this week.
What kind of peanuts do you use?
Just salted peanuts. Yeah. Not
like
Spanish.
Cocktail peanuts?
Yeah.
Fisher Nuts, a proud sponsor?
They're not fried.
That's what I'm hearing. Let's take a break. It's Tech Tuesday. Bridget Carey has some things to tell you. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Tech Tuesday music, Bill. It is a Tuesday, and it's a Tech Tuesday. On the line with us right now is CNET senior editor Bridget Carey. Bridget, how are you?
I'm doing really good because my life is at one speed right now. And I don't know if you've heard, but Netflix might be changing some settings so you can watch life in 2x speed or watch your movies like at 1.5 times the speed.
Why would they do that, Bridget?
Why would anyone do that?
Oh, that's horrible.
You know, we have a columnist here at CNET named Claire, and she wrote, it is what we deserve. It is the grim new TV hell we deserve because we just want to keep binging all these shows. And Netflix is not necessarily, you know, going to make this a feature, but they are testing it. I mean, someone in the company thought it was a good idea to at least test it. Right now, if you, like, are watching something on YouTube, you can always have it at a little bit of a faster speed. Or people do this with podcasts, too. They kind of want to digest the news, and it sounds just a little bit faster, right? But when you're watching a movie, when you're watching a show, there's pacing. There's an art to this. Stop it. We don't need to be, like, you know, gulping it down, you know, so fast. So I hope it doesn't actually become a real feature. And it might, if it is a feature right now, it might just mean me be on phones. I just don't see the purpose for it when it comes to entertainment versus maybe, like, a tutorial on YouTube on how to fix your toilet, you know, you just want to skim it fast.
Bridget, I don't know if you're aware of this, but years ago they developed this system by which, and they did it here at WGN Television. We were one of the first ones to do it. If you were watching a rerun of the show, they figured out a way to sell more ad time to add another commercial break. So when characters on the show were not talking to each other, but just simply moving, like let's say you were watching the Dick Van Dyke Show and Rob Petrie was moving from one end of the living room to the other, they would speed that up. Not the dialogue parts, but just the motion parts. That way they could sell another commercial or two, you know?
Are you kidding?
We no.
We added 20 seconds in there. Wow.
Yeah.
You're teaching me things. I never knew that.
Yeah. But you could only notice it if you were looking for it, but you'd be watching a show and you'd say, that's so weird that every time anyone does anything like walk or just does an action, it's happening so fast, but that's why. They figured out a way to sell more.
You know, it really just is a commentary on the problem we have right now with the streaming wars kicking up. Okay, on Friday, Apple's new streaming service that goes against Netflix is going to be launching. And a few more weeks, you got the Disney Plus one launching. And so really, you're having this time where there's just too much content and not enough time in the day, right? That's always the problem. So when we, you know, like, how do you have appointment television anymore? You don't. You binge everything. But they're all kind of fiddling with the formula to see what works and what doesn't. I think it's just a big experimentation time because everyone's throwing all their big stars and all this money into streaming. We as consumers, we're getting some good programs out of it if you can keep track of it all.
But wouldn't you think that the people that are responsible for making these products, the directors, the writers, the producers, wouldn't they be a little upset because it's altering their vision of what their product is?
They just want viewers.
Oh, I don't know if you saw Judd Apatow, was tweeting, like, no, do not do this. You know, he used some choice words that I shouldn't say on air. But, yeah, he was very adamant about how this is pretty much the worst thing you can do.
Yeah,
to mess
I
with
agree.
A director or writer.
I've been really enjoying the new Watchmen series and two different views at home. I would like them all to drop at one time like Stranger Things did because then I can choose when I want to watch it. My husband was saying, no, I like to have some anticipation waiting for it. But now there is a lot of pressure to to watch the things you want to watch, but I can't imagine people watching something at 1.5 times the speed. Listening is different if you're right. You want to get through some kind of instructional thing, but to enjoy it, we're right. not able to enjoy it then. Hmm. I'm not for it.
I mean, who's cramming, like, overnight, like, a whole season so they can catch up on something?
Yeah.
Like priorities, people. Priorities.
All right, so Apple AirPods are a thing, and I think people look really goofy. I think it looks better if you have the cord, but now there's an Apple AirPods Pro. What is so professional about it?
They look like little hair dryers in your ear.
Yes, they do.
And these little ear dangler earbuds are wireless, and they now are going to have different little accessory foam pads, so they'll fit in more ear shapes. At least that's what they're saying. And also, it has noise canceling. I don't know if you are familiar with how noise canceling works, but these are the first Apple-made earphones to feature like a noise isolating design with these silicone ear tips, and also will have noise cancellation.
There's already a lot of people that I think it's illegal to wear these when you're driving, but without,
oh, is it? Yeah.
I think so, but yeah. With the cords in, I just think we're going to be all running into each other,
right.
Walking and on yeah. bikes, and my husband puts them on when I like to talk, so noise canceling might be a plus for
yeah.
And is Fitbit still a thing? Do people still wear Fitbits? I'm not seeing people wear them. It's more like the Apple Watch.
You know, it depends on what you're doing it for. I think a lot of people who have just a desire for tracking their activity and keeping it only that, like I just want to track my running. Some people like the Fitbit. Fitbit actually has a watch-type design if you want to go. There's many different flavors and models of Fitbit. It's not just the simple, like, oh, I ran up 30 flights of stairs or whatever people do who are fit. I don't know. I'm not fit. I don't know what fit people do. But, yeah, Fitbit's pretty much the number one competitor, I think, when it comes to versus the Apple Watch when people are really deciding. I mean, Samsung's got watches too, but you kind of, people tend to gravitate more towards either like a Fitbit type of design or an Apple Watch.
All right. Well, it's a Tech Tuesday. She's the CNET senior editor over at CNET. You can go to CNET.com, follow her on social media. Bridget Carey, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Bridget. Take care.
Maybe next week we can talk to her on 1.5 times as fast and get more information.
I honestly think that's the worst idea.
I agree.
I know technology is always changing and supposedly making things better, but to speed everything up like that, that's not good.
News coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Found something on WTTW, how Chicago played a major role in setting America's time zones. And I said this to Bill, and you knew that?
I did know this.
How'd you know that?
I just know some stuff.
All right. Explain it.
Nope. Nobody's business but my own.
Now, I was thinking about this because we change our clocks this coming weekend. We fall back.
Uh-huh.
Love that extra hour. I wish we could do that every Saturday night.
I'll try that, see what happens.
Yeah.
It's up to you.
Well, before our clocks fell back and sprung forward, there were dozens of time zones in the United States, and one Chicago hotel was at center stage in deciding how railroad companies and the rest of the country would synchronize their watches.
Dozens of time zones.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah. This was in, like, in cowboy times, right?
1800s.
Yeah.
Were cowboys around then?
Yeah. Cowboys were around in 1800s.
I don't know the time frame for cowboys.
Yeah.
Before technology allowed time to be synchronized, people used the sun to figure out what time it was.
Uh-huh.
Where the shadows were cast and everything.
So when you would go to a new town, it was kind of up to that town to decide what time it was. Because they weren't synced up. They didn't have the technology for everything to be synced up together.
Right.
So you'd show up somewhere and you'd ask a guy, what time is it? And he'd look at his watch and he would tell you. But then you go to a different town and it was completely off center.
Yes. Different towns across America look to the sky at noon to set their clocks.
Oh.
Meaning noon in New York was several minutes before noon in Philadelphia or Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
As railroads expanded rapidly throughout the 19th century, a need emerged for a standardized time system that would allow companies to coordinate the train schedules, because otherwise it'd be going willy-nilly.
It'd be random.
without having to account for the different times in different cities. Now, officially, the railroads operated on nearly 50 different time zones, making scheduling pretty complicated. In Chicago, the Dearborn Observatory at the University of Chicago was in charge of setting the time. Ha-ha!
Yeah.
You knew that?
I did.
I don't believe you.
Why would I lie about that?
Because that's just factual information that I'm blown away by, and you're just so matter of fact.
I don't only know Huckleberry Hound episodes. I know other stuff, too.
In 1883, the heads of the railroad companies met at the Grand Pacific Hotel, which is at the corner of Jackson and LaSalle in downtown Chicago, for something called the General Time Convention.
Uh-huh.
They were congregating in Chicago because it was a major railroad hub. The hotel itself was already a significant landmark. It was designed in the Palazzo architectural style. It was destroyed by the Great Chicago Fire.
Yeah, sad.
In 1871, just days after it was built.
Ah, tragic.
That's terrible.
Yeah, bad timing.
It was rebuilt, soon earned its place among the big four hotels built after the fire, including the Palmer House, the Tremont, and the Sherman House. And it was in the luxurious halls of the Grand Pacific Hotel that the General Time Convention decided to adopt the standard time system. It divided the country into four time zones. It's still used in the continental United States.
Mm-hmm.
The new time zones went into effect on November 18th, 1883.
Oh, so it's been in existence for quite a while.
Railroad clocks were synchronized to a signal from a Pennsylvania observatory, and the day was dubbed the Day of Two Noons.
Oh, that sounds like a Outer Limits episode.
It does. And it wasn't until 1918 that Congress passed a law to officially adopt the standard time system. I still get confused about it. So if it's Eastern time, that is an hour ahead of us?
Yeah. When in New York... When
like right now at
1 o'clock in New York, it's 12 o'clock here.
All right, it's 11:10. So what time is it in New York?
It's 12:10 in New York.
Okay, and California is 2 hours earlier?
Right.
Does that fluctuate when we do the time change? Do they do the time change?
No, they're also in on the time change.
But parts of Indiana aren't? I just don't understand.
Indiana, for some reason, does not subscribe to the theory of time that we all do. It's up to every man, woman, and child individually what time it is in Indiana on any given day. Because there have been places in Indiana where it's 9 o'clock on one side of the street and it's 8 o'clock on the other side of the street.
Are you
Isn't
being
that
facetious?
Crazy? No. When I did stand up in clubs in Indiana, I would call every day and I'd say, "What time is the show tonight?" And they would tell me, and I go, "What time is it right now?" Because the time zones were just all kind of haphazard. It wasn't like the entire state or an entire county. It went by region. It was really backwards. I don't know if it's still that way. They may have fixed it.
All right. Well, for my whole life, I called it daylight savings
time. You're wrong. It's singular.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like Bill Nye the Science Guy all of a sudden.
With time,
today.
Yeah.
Jeez.
No, it's saving time. But I think you're not alone in that. Still to this day, nearly everybody says savings time instead of saving time.
And have we confirmed that the reason they did this is so farmers could tend to their crops?
Everyone has a different story. My favorite one is that it's athletic companies that are behind it because they wanted to provide more time for people to use their athletic gear, which doesn't, I mean, couldn't you say that about any industry?
What, did Mr. Reebok tell you that?
Yes, Larry Reebok told me that. But you could say that about any industry that to create more time for their product. They lobbied to have that extra hour.
Well, there's also a study that was done by the U.S. Department of Transportation back in 1975. And when you have daylight saving time in effect, it trims the entire country's electricity usage by a small but significant amount. And that sure makes sense.
Right. I could see that.
But
wouldn't you be okay? Like, if they just put an end to it, if they just said, it's going to be the same all year round, so deal with it. That's not hard, right? I'd prefer that it didn't exist.
Well, here's the problem. First of all, you notice summer's coming to the end when it gets cold out, but you don't know anymore because sometimes it's 80 degrees in October, although this year, not so much.
Yeah, yeah.
But you notice, it's like dark at 5:30 now.
And isn't that awful?
Right.
Yeah.
So if we spring or fall back, it's going to be dark at 4:30. I think that's worse.
I would, like, if somebody said, all right, we tried that daylight saving time thing for a while, and it was fine, but we're not going to have it anymore, would you be even a little bit upset? I'd be so care. Okay with it.
Like I said, I would like to be able to turn my clock back every Sunday night.
Lobby for that. See if we can get that passed.
All right, 312-981-7200. Chris has called us. Chris, you live in Indiana. Can you explain some stuff to us?
You know, I wish I could. Indiana is so backwards. You know, I live in Northwest Indiana, and I know Porter County and Lake County are on, what's it called, Central Time.
Right.
And the rest of the state is on Eastern Time.
So right now where you are, what county are you in right now?
I'm in Lake County, and it's 11:14
right now. It's 11:14, but it's 1983. Explain that to me. I can't figure that part out.
Yeah, you're right. I have no idea why it's, like I said, Indiana is backwards on an awful lot of things.
Isn't that screwy that they can't come to some agreement that the whole state should be on the same time?
And you know what? I know this sounds really weird, but sometimes I think it's politics, because Northwest Indiana is generally Democrat, where the rest of the state is Republican.
Yeah.
We're the only two counties in Indiana other than Marion County, where Indianapolis is Porter County and Lake County are Democrat, and the rest of the state's Republican.
Is it, but
I swear to God, I think that's got something to do with it.
Doesn't that prove how crazy politics are, that Democrats and Republicans can't even agree on what time it is?
That's amazing. Yes, that's a good point.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Now, I have cousins that live in Indiana, and we went to LaPorte over the summer. And last year on Sunday, you couldn't buy beer at all. Now you can, but here's my question. Why don't they have cold beer? I mean, I went to a Meijer or something, and there was no refrigerated beer. So what good was that for me to buy it on a Sunday?
Well, you got to go to a liquor store. They have it cold at the liquor stores, but just not at like a Meijer's or Target or anything like that.
But they had wine cold. Isn't that weird?
Oh, that is strange.
Oh, that's a little. You know, it's just kind of strange, though, that it was 2019 before we were able to buy alcohol in Indiana anyway.
That
you know, and I grew up right on the border, so we were able to go into Illinois and you know, get our booze on a weekend, on a Sunday if we had to, you know. But Indiana is crazy.
And Michigan's one of those states where they have drive-in liquor stores where you don't even have to get out of your car. It's just a drive-through
window.
They
had those in the south suburbs for a while, too.
Did they? Yeah.
Yeah. There was a drive-through pantry. Like, really? Yeah. I could just go and I'll take 2 6-packs of
they loaded
PBR
up for you.
Because I'm a hipster now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
I can't believe, Wendy, you just said PBR. I thought I was the only one that drank it.
No, and it's funny because I think at our family picnics when I was growing up, there was PBR in our, it was a galvanized thing that we called the silver pool, and you'd put ice in there and beer, and then you'd put like a beach blanket over it to keep the sun from penetrating. This is, I guess we couldn't afford a cooler. I don't know what the deal was. Mm. And my mom would drink Pabst Blue Ribbon then, and then it went away forever, and now it's back, and I had one last weekend. It's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really good. Yeah. What's next? Schlitz? Take care, guys.
Bye, Chris.
Have a good one, Chris.
If what Chris says is true, we'll have that conversation with him an hour ago. Isn't that weird? I don't know how that happens. What are your thoughts? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. Throw one more in just for the heck of it.
Nine.
That's perfect.
We're talking about central time zones, daylight saving, singular time.
Well done. Well done.
It's all a matter of time, Bill.
Yeah.
And we were talking about Indiana. A lot of topics going on at this point. Hi, Marianne. How are you?
Hello. Just fine.
We wanted to clear up some information on Indiana.
Yeah. Yes. I live in Northwest Indiana also, and it's my understanding that there's a small corner, yes, in Northwest Indiana that observes Central Standard Time, but also the southern part of the state in the southwest corner, why I don't know, also observes Central Standard Time. I live in Rensselaer, and just south of Rensselaer, approximately less than 10 miles, is the line. And the way it is.
But isn't that an easy fix? You could fix that in an afternoon if you wanted to, couldn't you?
Yeah. Well, somebody, that it's been a hotly debated topic for many years, and I don't know what year it was. They tried to change it. was unsuccessful, I think, at the time that Mitch Daniels was our governor.
Yeah.
Now, is the whole point of Northwest Indiana staying in cahoots with Chicago is because it's, you know, in the Chicago metro area, in a sense?
I think at the time that was, you know, kind of the way it was, that we were more tied, or at least, you know, that's my understanding. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but at the time, yeah, that was the thinking.
We should all be on Rensselaer time, Marianne.
Chicago. I'm sorry?
The whole country should be on Rensselaer time, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
Well, thank you very much for the information. Appreciate it.
I enjoy your show.
Thanks, Marianne. Take care.
Thank you, Marianne. Schlitz did come back 10 years ago. People are texting. I have another question, too.
Yes.
We talked about this briefly. I always would coordinate my clock changing with my anniversary. So it always happened the last Saturday of October.
Yes.
And it's only been like maybe 3 years that they switched it to this upcoming weekend.
Right. They did.
And why was that?
I think because enough people were complaining about it that it was happening too early.
Like it happened the week of Halloween?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
And what's going on with Halloween? Are people going to wait till Halloween to go trick-or-treating?
Well, yeah, they were talking earlier in the year about possibly moving Halloween. It's always been on the 31st of October, obviously, but people said it's better to do it on a weekend. Let's do it on a Saturday before the 31st. And then I was thinking the other day, I'm sure you remember, this Saturday that came right before the Halloween was very rainy and cold and awful. And I kept thinking it's a good thing they didn't move it. But now the forecast says it's going to be just as cold and possible snow flurries on Halloween. So you're kind of messed up either way, if you had done it on Saturday or if you're doing it on Thursday.
That's not fair.
No, it's not fair. I always feel so bad for kids because they look forward to that day, you know, all year long. And then if you get one of those Halloweens where the weather's awful, and we've had our share here in Chicago, it's so not fair to the kids.
And there were, I think on Saturday, actually, I know the Village of LaGrange had their Halloween walk. They did it, you know, the weekend before Halloween. I felt bad because I haven't purchased my candy yet. And mm-hmm. I thought, if these kids are in costumes and walking around downtown, if that was you, wouldn't you have also rung some doorbells while
absolutely.
You were there?
Absolutely.
Not one kid did.
Nobody.
Thankfully, because I had nothing. I had nothing to give them.
I've heard other people discuss this, but I get it because I was a part of this for a while. That traditional Halloween parade that so many kids have at their school, you know, where they walk around the schoolyard in their costumes and all the parents come out and they take pictures. For all the kids that are in Chicago public schools, that won't be an event this year. And you know, that's kind of sad.
But I thought they stopped it at several schools anyway.
They have.
I just don't understand it.
Yeah. But Halloween should be on Halloween.
Yes. It's,
right?
Yes.
And I know that, you know, 5 times out of every 7, just the way that weekends work, you're not going to get it on a Saturday or a Sunday, but it's manageable.
Easter fluctuates. Thanksgiving fluctuates.
Yeah.
If Halloween is on an actual day, you know, Christmas never fluctuates.
Right.
It's always December 25th. You can't change it.
Yeah. Agreed.
Are you dressing up?
No. Oh, no. You know that. Why would I dress up? If you've got this look going, you don't want to tamper with this. Come on.
You look beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
By the way, Las Vegas Odds has you as a heavy favorite to surprise everybody with a costume like you did last year.
Yeah, I am so not. I hate Halloween.
But you set a precedent last year by dressing like Ozzy Osbourne. You're not going to do it anymore? I'm
going to
lose a lot of money on this.
It's such a long story that I'll make really short. I bought a mannequin.
Wendy,
do me
a favor. Don't finish it. Just leave it there. You don't need to go any further.
My son did a song called Plastic Nancy. It's about a girl who's plastic. So we ordered a mannequin because he was going to make a video. Ended up not making the video, but I had a mannequin and I purchased a couple of wigs for her. I honest to God, this is the truth.
Get to the weird part.
So I purchased 2 wigs for the naked mannequin. It was very attractive,
yeah,
by the way.
Sure.
And I had 2 wigs to choose from, and I'm like, I got wigs sitting here. No one's using them. Even the mannequin's not using them.
Yeah.
what should I do? And then I threw together an Ozzy Osbourne costume.
Very authentic.
I was very, very proud of myself last year, but I'm not doing anything this year.
No? All right.
Unless, I mean, I have a mannequin.
Obviously.
My friend just saw a person walking in Pete's Market with a mannequin in a wheelchair. He was pushing this mannequin around, all dressed up, and he was talking to this mannequin in the produce section, and it was very odd.
Was his name Norman?
What I said. I go, Mrs. Bates in the wheelchair.
So strange.
It was really creepy, she said, and it wasn't Halloween thing. She said it seemed legit. So I don't know. Are people walking around with mannequins now? Well, they have them in their cars.
You started it, Wendy.
Yeah.
Well, you were a trendsetter.
Okay, can I just tell you, I had a mannequin, and you like gave me this look like, are you sure you want to be talking about this on the air?
As soon as you said that, I thought, were you in Pete's Market the other day?
Yeah.
No, but here's what I'm thinking I should do. I should dress that mannequin up as a witch and put it on my porch for Halloween.
Yeah. Do that. Yeah, do that.
She disassembles.
Yeah, dress her in something cool.
Maybe I'll put her in a wheelchair and bring her in on Halloween.
Disassembles to what extent?
The torso is one part.
Yeah.
The head is another part.
Yeah.
Arms are separate. Mm. And then one leg, and then one leg and buttock.
Oh. That's fun. That's a fun game to assemble.
It was only like $60. And like I said, we bought it to make a music video.
Yeah.
And then the video hasn't been made yet, but it was up in the basement, and I kind of liked it because I have some cool clothing that I put on her. And Jim, every time he walked into the basement, would freak out.
I wonder why.
Well, because it's just after like the third time you'd go, there's a mannequin down.
Every single time I saw it, it would spook me. Every single time.
It did. So Jim then ended up putting a sheet over it, and I said, okay, that's not scarier.
Yeah.
She has been disassembled. I can bring you the one leg and buttock.
I'm good. No, I'm all right. I'm fine. All right. We'll take a break. We will not take a break. We will just we will turn it to news, and then some of us will splash cold water on our faces.
You're just jealous.
I'm not jealous.
All right. It is 11:30 and time for news here on WGN. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, it's WGN Radio, and boy, Peter Asher on the line with us, and it's tough. Do you begin with a Peter and Gordon song, a Beatles song? What would you have chosen, Peter?
I don't know. Thank you, and good morning. I'm not sure, because you're right. I mean, one could play songs from various eras, you know. I suppose it could be Peter and Gordon. It could also be, a James Taylor song or something
Linda
I worked
Ronstadt.
On much later on, so... Indeed. Yes, indeed.
So nice to talk to you. You are, of course, you have a new book out, and I'm excited to read it, The Beatles from A to Z, an Alphabetical Mystery Tour. How did this all begin? Was this when you were doing your From Me to You show on the Beatles channel?
Exactly so, yes. You know, I when I was doing my From Me to You show, at one point I decided to try a series of 26 alphabetically inspired shows, kind of essentially stealing the idea from Sesame Street, when you get right down to it. So each show would have a particular letter, and I would talk about not only songs that began with that letter, but people and places and musical instruments and musical styles and cities and, you know, anything that came to mind. It's a very free-form kind of thing. And so when I'd done that, it seemed to work as a radio show. And then I got a call from a publisher, Henry Holt, and they said, you know, we love those shows. We were listening to them, and we think that could be turned into a book. And I went, oh, well, that's interesting. That's cool. I started, you know, first of all, of course, I thought it would be very easy. I thought, oh, great, well, you just transcribe everything I said on the radio, and there's your book. And, of course, when you do that and you start reading it, you kind of go, this is awful. Because talking on the radio is not the same as writing it down to live forever. So I realized it actually did mean I had to sit and write everything. Plus the fact that on the radio, of course, when you talk about a piece of music, you play it. And when in the book... you don't. So I had to start explaining in some musical detail what I thought was remarkable about the Beatles and their music and so on, along with a more, you know, a more thorough analysis of the times and what happened and the people involved and so on. So I did that, and it took, you know, I guess all in, this whole thing took about a year to get together. And now it's actually out today. So
today's the day.
Congratulations. All right, Peter, it's such a novel approach to come at the Beatles from that direction. Let's go letter by letter. But what happens when you get to a letter like X and no song titles start with X that the Beatles have ever done, and there's very few stories that start with X? What do you do there?
You panic, but eventually... Eventually, you know, here's what I did with X, for example. I suddenly realized I could start talking about ex-Beatles.
Ah.
And of course, when you get right down to it, all four of the Beatles eventually became ex-Beatles.
Yes.
So I cheated that way. I skirted around that one pretty easily. Plus, being English, I do love a bad joke and a bad pun. So when somebody said to me, you do realize that the Beatles wrote a song about X-rays, and you have to include that. And I went, they did? And which the answer was, yes, I'm looking through you.
Beautiful. Well done.
Exactly. Where's a drum roll when you need it? But, I cheated in various creative ways.
And also, like, covering the group's career, but you also branch into their solo careers and some of their inspiration, correct?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I talk about both the before Beatles and after Beatles. Yes, exactly. Because what people forget, you know, is that it's all based, the Beatles and the entire British invasion, so-called, was based on our admiration and respect and for your music, you know. Before the Beatles started writing songs, which they turned out to do rather well, it must be said, they probably never performed a British song in their whole lives. It was all based on American music. So, you know, and the same with Peter and Gordon, and the same with that whole British invasion phenomenon. We fell in love with American rock and roll and folk music and jazz and blues and everything. And essentially tweaked it ever so slightly and sold it all back to you. It was amazing.
And by tweaked, you mean made it better, don't you? Because it was better.
No, I'd never say, you know. I don't think so, because even the Beatles wouldn't claim that their version of Twist and Shout was better than the Isley Brothers, you know. It was different. And we were, Gordon and I, when we started singing together, you know, we tried to sound as much like the Everly Brothers as was humanly possible. We didn't succeed, and in not succeeding, we came up with something a little bit different that people liked. But I would never say better.
So, Peter and Gordon days, is this mentioned in the book? Because it does kind of go back to Paul.
Yes, Peter and Gordon days are certainly mentioned in the book because, you know, that's when I first met the Beatles, obviously, was when I became friends with Paul through a series of circumstances. And that, you know, Gordon and I were already, we'd met at school and had started singing together and then eventually got gigs, you know, pubs and clubs and coffee bars and all that kind of stuff. So we were a working band as well.
And the fifth Beatle is mentioned with a connection to your mother. Explain that.
Well, yes, here's one of the really curious coincidences, the kind of thing if you wrote it in a movie script, nobody would believe it. But my mother was a classical musician. She was played in various major orchestras, and then she gave oboe lessons. She was an oboe player, and she was oboe professor at the Royal Academy of Music. But she also gave private lessons. And among the aspiring young oboe players to whom she gave lessons before the Beatles era was a boy by the name of George Martin. And so by the time she met George Martin later, as the Beatles record producer, you know, it's George, you know. I actually, they ran into each other, you know, only back when they were both still alive, and you know, when my mother was 90 something, and they reminisced about the oboe lessons she'd given him, you know, 70 something years earlier.
That is so crazy. I love little inside stories like that. We know you're lined up for a bunch of interviews. You're 75 years old. I want to tell you what I told Bill off the air as we were talking. And please don't take offense to this. You don't look like you're 75, but I have to be honest with you. I thought you were older because of everything you've accomplished in your life.
Oh, Oh, no, that's flattering in both respects. Thank you. Don't look like you're 75. You look like you're 95. No, no, I know what you mean. And yes, I've been very lucky. I mean, at my age, obviously, one is fortunate to be still working. Well, it's a fortunate to be still here. But I love what I do, and I have no intention of retiring. I haven't taken up golf yet or anything. So. I still love being in the studio making records, and I love doing my radio show, and I go out and do shows a lot too. So I keep it up, and I think in the same way that Paul McCartney, I mean, goodness me, he's a year older than me, about a year or so, I think, and there he is out doing, you know, 3-hour concerts on long tours, and we clearly know that he has no need to do that in any respect other than the fact he loves it and loves the audience and loves the music. And so I think, you know, it might be a cliche to say that perhaps that keeps us young, but perhaps in some sense it does.
Peter, a few moments ago you used the Beatles experience as a phenomenon, and that's a very accurate term, but I want to build on that for a second. It's a phenomenon that can never happen again, can it? Can there ever be anything like the Beatles again?
Yes. I mean, we just don't know what it is and when it'll happen. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, after Bach or Mozart, they probably went, well, there'll never be anyone that good again, you know. And no, there will be no one like them. That's true. But could there be someone as good or as important? In theory, I see no reason why not, and I hope there is. We might not be alive to see it,
yeah.
But will musical genius of some kind reassert itself? Yes. For us, it's the Beatles, you know, for sure. And there's lots of other immensely talented, brilliant artists and songwriters, but the Beatles was the perfect storm. 4 extraordinary musicians, several extraordinary writers, all coinciding and being in the same band at the same time, and meeting George Martin, and, you know, the whole thing, just everything fell into place, and it was miraculous.
He's Peter.
I think it'll happen again, just because I'd like to believe that it will.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting.
He's Peter Asher, and get his new book. It's out today, The Beatles from A to Z, an Alphabetical Mystery Tour. And are you still playing guitar?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I go out and do gigs fairly often, and I'm actually off on a cruise next week that I'm playing on, and then I've got some shows coming up. I'm playing in New York in December and so on. So, yeah, I'm all over the place, and I very much enjoy still playing. I mean, there's a guitar a mere 2 feet away from me here in my study at home.
Well, come see us next time you're in Chicago.
I would love to. Yeah, I think we're coming to play Chicago soon, but I should know it in my head if I was an effective self-promotion person. But I will tell you, if I may, peterashermusic.com, if anyone is curious, that has all the dates that we're doing on it. peterashermusic.com is the website that somebody puts all that info up on.
That is Peter Asher. His book is The Beatles from A to Z, an Alphabetical Mystery Tour, and like you said, his website, peterashermusic.com. Thank you, Peter. Keep up the great work.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Thank you so much. He is so nice, so talented, and I'm very happy we had him.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
A break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Where did I just see the ZZ Top car? Oh, at the Museum of Broadcast Communication.
Oh, they have it there? Yeah.
The Eliminator Mobile.
Yeah, nice.
We were just talking to Peter Asher, and I'm confused because he's from Peter and Gordon.
Right.
But he's on tour with Jeremy.
From Chad and Jeremy.
Clyde, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well,
Are they interchangeable?
No, they're not interchangeable. But I think the other members are no longer with us. Yeah, so... And I didn't say this when he was on, because how awful would that have been? But in my head, I could never remember who was who. I remember on the Dick Van Dyke Show, there was an episode where a band called the Redcoats came to visit and stayed with the Petrie family. And I can never remember if that was Peter and Gordon, Chad and Jeremy. It is Chad and Jeremy who were the Redcoats.
Yeah, because you asked him last time we spoke to him.
Yeah.
And he was fine with it. And this is the second time you mentioned the Dick Van Dyke Show today.
I got a third one coming up in the bonus hour.
All right. right.
I got a Maury Amsterdam thing I'm going to pull out
God,
for you.
He was
yeah,
so
it's going
to
be fun.
But if you go to peterashermusic.com, he is coming to town. Not as soon as he made me feel.
When
but,
is he coming?
Friday, January 3rd at the City Winery here in Chicago. That's going to be a great show. And it's a musical memoir of the 60s and beyond. Peter Asher and Jeremy Clyde.
That'd be a fun show. Now, I'm not going to say he's wrong, but the question I asked him toward the end where I was saying, can there ever be another phenomenon like the Beatles? His answer was yes. He said that at some point, somebody will come along and will be the new Beatles, kind of.
And you beg to differ with him?
I don't know. You know, the last thing I'm going to do is bring on a guest and fight with them, especially over something like this. But I don't think that could ever happen again. Where the Beatles influenced everything to the extent that they influenced music, they influenced fashion, they influenced so many things, so many bands that came after the Beatles got into music and play their style of music because of the Beatles. I'd be shocked. I know that other bands come along and are a very popular entity for a while, but I don't think it'll ever be like that.
When you in the fashion and just everything that they brought style-wise, musically, and otherwise, I think I would agree with you.
Don't you think?
Greta Van Fleet will do it.
Right. Well, you know how, like, every couple of years, and I'm struggling for an example. I guess this year it would be BTS would be an example.
Yeah.
Right?
Is that the boy band?
The Korean boy band. So they come along, and everybody gets very, very excited. But what tends to happen is in a year or two, they just kind of, no offense to the guys in BTS, but what history shows us is those popular flavors of the day just kind of fade away at some point. You know, the popularity ebbs.
And not really like fade away where their work was insubstantial, but it doesn't cause a movement like the Beatles did.
Right.
I agree with you 100% on this. I'm surprised you didn't ask him about Yoko, because we were just talking the other day, and you know everybody blames Yoko for the band breaking up, and then you speak to people who were involved with the band, and they say it would have happened regardless of Yoko's
meddling. I think it would have happened eventually without Yoko, but I think she sped up the process. Don't you?
I don't know. I mean, they all had girls. Linda McCartney was around all the time, too.
Yeah.
Why wasn't she blamed? I know she's no longer with us.
I don't think she... I'm just guessing here because I wasn't there for it, but I don't see her as the detracting influence that Yoko Ono was for John Lennon, where Yoko was convincing him, you don't need these guys. You can pull this off on your own, or maybe I'll sing along with you. That'll be fun. Linda did backups on stuff with Wings, but she wasn't trying to say to Paul McCartney.
I'm sorry.
She wasn't saying to Paul McCartney, hey, these other three guys are dead weight. You could probably pull this off on your own.
But how do you know that? And George went solo. They all kind of had their solo things going.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is it just Yoko that gets blamed for everything?
I don't know the answer to that.
She's a scapegoat.
She's, and that's how she sings like a scapegoat. I've heard her music. Scapegoatian is the way to describe it. You're absolutely right.
It is a little, I have to admit.
But don't you think, like, just when you watch those, you know, the old films or tapes of the Beatles on Ed Sullivan's show or, you know, performing at their concerts, the madness that was the Beatles in the 60s, I can't see that sort of enthusiasm ever again where, you know, every magazine cover, every lunchbox, every haircut, everything was influenced by those guys.
630 has texted, when I was a kid, Tom McCann's shoes sold Beatle boots.
Yes,
and there
were
Beatle wigs. Did you have a pair?
I didn't have a pair, but I've seen pictures of them.
And that would still be popular today. Like if all of a sudden, not Gucci because no one could afford them, but if all of a sudden somebody came out, I mean, there are Beatle boots, but I mean, a legitimate Beatle boot.
Right.
They would sell not just for Halloween and costumes.
Yeah.
People would wear that.
Yeah, I think so.
And I can't think of another band that changed the face of fashion as much as they did.
Haircuts. The haircuts, the ties, the suit jackets, everything that they were wearing. And then when they got more outrageous, you know, that culture changed as well. They were just at the forefront of everything for such a long time. And now when you talk to bands to this day in 2019, who are your influences? They still go back to the Beatles. That just happens commonplace. I could be wrong on this. But I don't see that ever happening to that extent again.
I don't think it can happen again because rock and roll is here.
Right.
Rock and roll is here to stay.
Oh, is it staying? I didn't realize that.
But that was just the beginning of it all, so there is no beginning of it again.
Right, right.
I agree with you for once.
Exactly. Oh.
I will give you
today's the day. I knew we'd do it. All right. More show ahead. We're going to the bonus hour, the stream. We would love to have you join us, but you have other options. We'll tell you what they are next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.